and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin on this Memorial Day weekend with reports that Trump's Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is slow-walking requests from the Senate Intelligence Committee for financial records and data of transactions between Trump associates and the Russians that FinCEN, the U.S. Treasury Division, has collected. James Henry, an investigative economist and lawyer who has written widely on offshore and onshore tax havens, kleptocracy, and pirate banking, who is a co-founder of DCReport.org and author of Blood Bankers, joins us to discuss how important the assets and capabilities of the Treasury Department are in investigating the layers of shell companies and offshore accounts that criminals, oligarchs, and money launderers use to disguise the sources of ill-gotten gains and the beneficiaries of secret transactions. Then we'll examine the role that Facebook could play in uncovering who is behind the fake news that was injected into the U.S. election and more recently the British, Dutch, French, and now the German elections. Jonathan Taplin, the founder and director emeritus of the Innovation Lab at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Southern California and author of the new book, Move Fast and Break Things, How Google, Facebook, and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy, joins us to discuss how these powerful new monopolies have amassed and monetized personal data while protected by safe harbor laws from responsibility for complicity in the dissemination of fake news, jihadist messaging, and criminal activity. Then finally, we'll look into America's diminishing role on the world stage with the leadership deficit from a president who may have made smart real estate deals but has so little knowledge of foreign affairs and how government works that instead of being the focus of flattery and adoring attention that he craves, he finds himself more and more as the dumbest guy in the room. Roger Morris, who served on the National Security Council under Presidents Johnson and Nixon and is the author of Kindred Rivals, America, Russia, and Their Failed Ideals, joins us to discuss a president out of his depth and the reckless endangerment of the United States. And joining us on this Memorial Day weekend is James Henry, an investigative economist and lawyer who has written widely about offshore and onshore tax havens, kleptocracy, and pirate banking. He is a senior fellow at the Columbia University Center on Sustainable Investment, a global justice fellow at Yale, and a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network and co-founder of DCReport.org with David K. Johnson. And his latest book is Blood Bankers. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Henry.
Got to be with you.
Thanks, James. And last week, House Democrats asked Deutsche Bank to hand over information concerning possible ties between accounts relating to President Trump and the Russians. And they're on the these are Democrats on the House Financial Services Committee. And apparently, Donald Trump owes something like $340 million in unpaid loans to Deutsche Bank. And the letter asks for information involving the 2011 mirror trading scandal in which $10 billion was laundered out of Russia and for which Deutsche Bank agreed to pay a $425 million fine to settle with the New York State investigation into this scheme. So Deutsche Bank's already been shown to be pretty dirty. So what's happening with the $340 million that Trump owes them?
Well, I think, you know, they've had a hard time getting it paid. Deutsche Bank was sued by Trump in 2008. He claimed that the Deutsche Bank was, which is his one creditor back then, had caused the financial crisis, and he pleaded force majeure in terms of a $40 million personal loan on a Chicago project. But Deutsche Bank has been his largest single creditor. All the other creditors that he has are private firms that are lending, you know, first mortgages against some of his more valuable properties like Trump Tower. But Deutsche Bank is also interesting because of this Russian case. And indeed, just on Wednesday last week, they announced a settlement pending apparently with the Justice Department of the money laundering charges. They'd already been subject to a $650 million fine for this Russian money laundering that went on from 2011 to 2015. The fine was from the New York State authorities and the Brits. So, you know, there still is outstanding prosecution, but it looks like the Justice Department under Sessions is, you know, going to be kind to Deutsche Bank. There's a lot more to know about Deutsche Bank and its operations in Russia. The previous chairman who moved on to become chairman of the Bank of Cyprus, Joseph Ackerman, you know, was very close to Putin. He was there from 2003 on and, you know, until 2012, and, you know, was was basically the guy who reduced the compliance procedures at the Deutsche Bank, and New York State found that he was personally responsible for a lot of the misbehavior that went on there. But basically, they were laundering an incredible amount of money through New York and Cyprus and other Deutsche Bank offices around the globe through this procedure of back-to-back trades. But anyway, the Trump relationship with Deutsche Bank is very peculiar. I mean, essentially, this is the only global bank that would lend to Trump after 2000, given the fact that he'd had, depending on how you count, between four and six bankruptcies during the 1990s, costing major banks at least $9 billion of write-offs. So no major bank would lend to him except Deutsche Bank. So it's a very interesting relationship, and I understand the Congress's desire to, you know, to pursue this.
Well, but the other avenue that Congress is trying to pursue, at least through the Senate Intelligence Committee, according to the top Democrat, Senator Mark Warner, is they have been trying to get information via FinCEN, which is the U.S. Treasury Division that looks into global financial transactions. They apparently are a very, very sophisticated group that really do know what's going on as much as anybody does about all of this shadow banking, offshore accounts, etc., dummy shell companies, all of those, that sort of mirrors and mirrors within mirrors that shelter who the actual owners are of these various properties and transactions and hidden funds.
That's right. I mean, the Obama administration had taken steps to increase the regulations that apply to foreign investors in the United States. And one of the things they did was with respect to real estate, they started to require investors from countries like Russia and China that were flight capitals pouring into, you know, say, New York real estate or the kinds of transactions that the Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort was engaged in with some of his Ukrainian partners, you know, where they were using anonymous shell companies to invest secretly in real estate. Well, FinCEN was beginning to crack down on that. In October, they issued some temporary regulations. And now we're concerned that the new Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin, is going to roll those regulations back and, you know, require less reporting on these foreign transactions. So it's kind of this financial secrecy is really a big part of, you know, the kind of the Trump-Russia connection network when it comes to these shady business deals that he and his colleagues have been engaged in. You know, and I've been focusing really on this kind of criminal network aspect of Trump's of the Trump-Russia relationship as opposed to the collusion story, which, you know, as much as subject of the investigations going on, you know, by the FBI and the Justice Department and the and much of the Senate work. But I think there's another whole story here, which, you know, has been the subject of several very good European documentaries that are, you know, just coming out this month or you know, just last week. There's a new one by ZDF, the German public television network, devoted a whole hour to it. Documentary called Trump and Organized Crime, and you know, I think they were making real progress in terms of investigating some of the projects that he was you know, he was involved with that were basically financed with the help of Russian or former Soviet Union GARCs and kleptocrats and in some cases convicted mobsters, basically using his projects as, you know, very sort of projects that they would not have to be very discriminating about to invest in. So,
right. Plus, they get to live in New York, and
a lot of these people living in the Trump properties. Right. You know, we've just identified a loan from a Putin-chaired bank, Russian bank, to a Canadian business guy who turned around and entered into a $15 million licensing deal with Trump to build the largest tower in Canada. There's questions about Trump properties in Florida, Panama, Phoenix, right midtown Manhattan, the Trump Soho. All of these projects had a lot of dodgy investments involved, and that's what these European documentaries, but so far no U.S. documentaries have gone after.
And again, I'm speaking with James Henry, an investigative economist and lawyer who has written widely about offshore and onshore tax havens, kleptocracy, and pirate banking. He's a senior fellow at the Columbia University Center on Sustainable Investment, a global justice fellow at Yale, a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network, and co-founder of DCReports.org with David K. Johnson. And his latest book is Blood Bankers. But just back to the FinCEN, the U.S. Treasury Division that apparently is extremely sophisticated in terms of its ability to track dark money around the world, and it's been used as a weapon, in effect. In many ways, it's the sort of new nuclear weapon. If you basically get cut off from the SWIFT banking system, as a lot of Putin's cronies have been, it's pretty bad news. And apparently, again, the Senate Intelligence Committee has been trying to get documentation out of FinCEN, and Mnuchin, the new Treasury Secretary, is slow walking it. So what do you think can be done there?
I think that there are a number of things. First of all, we do have an increasing concern on the part of European allies, the United States, that all this activity has been going on. And so they have their own kinds of FinCEN equivalents where they are able to monitor the ownership and transactions of some of these networks. I think FinCEN is basically responsive to congressional pressure, and so to some extent, if there is a uproar about the extension of secrecy to protect these crooks on the part of the American people, we can complain about it. But the intelligence agencies themselves have also got their own access to these, this kind of information, and the FBI has probably some of the best access as well. So there are other alternative sources of data about financial transactions. It's just that you'd like to see the U.S. Treasury moving toward more transparency and not less, because it's really bad for the encouragement of the kinds of kleptocratic institutions that we're seeing, proliferate now in the Middle East and former Soviet Union countries and also China. Kleptocracy is on the march.
So let's turn then to your belief, James Henry, that in many ways Trump's prior business dealings with the Russians and others, which is all pretty much out there, most of it is, at least obviously you're doing a lot of digging to find more information, but even I understand with the information that you have so far, you think you could make a stronger case against him than what the intelligence communities are looking into in terms of possible collusion with the Russians over the election.
The issue with respect to his projects is that some of them look very much like a combination of money laundering and fraud on investors, where investors were simply not informed or told up front before they invested in these projects or in the condos that they were buying, about who the dodgy business partners that Trump was doing business with, even though he knew who they were. Now, money laundering statutes of limitation go back, 10 years, so you could potentially bring in some of the transactions that happened in 2007 and 2008. There's also, a number of deals that were done, like the purchase of his house in Palm Beach by this Russian oligarch who suddenly showed up and had $95 million to spend on a house that had cost Trump $41 million 4 years earlier. And conveniently kind of got him off the hook on his $40 million Deutsche Bank debt, because that profit flowed right to his pocket. You know, that's a transaction that nobody really understands. There are a bunch of transactions like that that we're beginning to understand. And one that just showed up in this Dutch documentary 2 weeks ago was involved a kleptocrat from Kazakhstan, a former mayor of Almaty, who fled to Switzerland. He ended up having a company, joint ventures in the Netherlands with this Russian mob-owned company, Bayrock. And the companies in the Netherlands were set up by Rudy Giuliani's law firm. So, you know, it seems like every week now we're beginning to understand more and more about the Manafort connections with this oligarch, Deripaska. He's getting $10 million a year to lobby on behalf of Deripaska, this aluminum czar. Who the United States wouldn't let in because of his organized crime connections. There are, just an explosion of material on the kind of criminal network side of the story that I wish the United States Congress would take a look at. They seem to be focusing mostly on, the tapes and the classified information, which is, the subject of the collusion story. This is, in a way, a much simpler story, and it may well be that, Trump can't be indicted for this stuff by a grand jury. I mean, he's the president of the United States. He has to be impeached, but certainly any congressional investigation could take a look at some of what we're finding on the criminal side.
So just in terms of the obvious stuff, that it's just such a coincidence that Trump Tower is full of Russian gangsters and kleptocrats. My understanding is that you can't really buy into a lot of buildings in New York. You've got to go through the co-op board, and you got to be approved. And it's pretty clear that there was no such restrictions on Trump's part. In fact, it was an open invitation. Bring your money, no matter where you're from, as long as your money's good.
No, you had people like Golubchik, who was running a gambling ring out of the 51st floor of Trump Tower. You had protégés of Mogilevich, who's the boss of Moscow, owning multiple apartments. One guy was a former Soviet Air Force veteran who, during the Vietnam War was helping to shoot down U.S. planes over Vietnam, and David Bogatin, and he served time for felonies, and he had five apartments in the Trump Tower. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's just... there's just the parade of dodgy relationships here. And I think, at the very least, you'd say this president wasn't very discriminating in terms of who he did business with. And as Cervantes says, you are who you walk with. And he's walking with, basically a bunch of, villains and garks and kleptocrats as his best friends. And just in the last few days, he places a call to Duterte, this murderous president in the Philippines, and basically lauds him on his, on his drug policy. I mean, the fellow just has really got low bar for who he does business with.
Well, just in closing, my understanding, I just talked to somebody the other day who had stayed in Trump Tower for a while, who subletted one of these condos, and said everything was incredibly cheap. The fixtures were cheap and falling apart, and the kitchens were incredibly small. So he, again, it's as though.
I think we could convict him of bad taste. I mean, I wouldn't want to live there. The reason that this place attracted so many dubious people was because, there was no condo board to kind of look on over the shoulder and say, what are you really doing for a living? And, so they could basically take all comers as long as they could pay the bills. The irony is that a lot of the people who are fleeing places like Russia and China with their, hard-earned billions, basically looking for a place that has the rule of law, that has democracy, that has respect for, kind of the independence of the judiciary. These are kind of the hard-fought institutions that the United States has. And it's ironic indeed that these are the kind of institutions that are wide open to the world's mobsters.
Well, James Henry, I thank you very much for joining us here today. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
And again, I've been speaking with James Henry. He's an investigative economist and lawyer who has written widely about offshore and onshore tax havens, kleptocracy, and pirate banking. He's a senior fellow at the Columbia University Center on Sustainable Investment, a global justice fellow at Yale, and a senior advisor at the Tax Justice Network, and co-founder of DCReport.org with David K. Johnston. His latest book is Blood Bankers.